Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Last week was a hell of a week.
Yes, we had Rory Farrell on our podcast, and Rory's story is a crazy one.
Yeah, he went from a fuck-up in high school to not a fuck-up today.
Well, less of a fuck-up. Less of a fuck-up, Rory.
He works at a real company, has a real job, plus he's the general manager of Henny Palooza, plus he's on the Joe Budden podcast every week.
But for the first time, he tells his story. This is his first interview ever.
Yeah. Great story, a lot of information, great moments through his life, and one of them just struck a chord online.
Yeah, well, when you start talking about Kanye news from 10 years ago, people freak the fuck out.
For any new listeners who are returning this week, shout out to you guys. We appreciate you pressing play. And all the messages that we received being like, yo, this story on It's the Reals podcast was super inspirational. There's a whole lot more episodes that we did that you should really listen to.
Yeah, so everybody from Sycamore to Wayno to Mano to who else had
Mike,
really
Mike
good?
Mike Posner, yeah. Mac Miller. There's a lot of inspirational podcasts that we've done over the last 2 years that you should really go back and press play on because they'll really make your day better.
Yeah.
So and what's really cool
is that we are taking this live.
Yeah.
We are going to be at Highline Ballroom on July 26th.
Hey, that's a Wednesday night.
At 8 p.m.
Yes. 8 to 11 p.m. Highline Ballroom, July 26th. Write it down because tickets are going to be on sale this Friday.
June 9th.
You can go to ticketweb.com or you can go to itsthereal.com and we'll make it easy. Have a link there for you to click on. Guys, we sold out a rap show at SOB's back in February. We're going to sell out Highline Ballroom for a podcast. It's going to be a night unlike any other.
Yeah, well, we're not just doing one guest. We're going to do a bunch of guests. Come through.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Have a good time.
Yes. Highline Ballroom. July 26th, it's a Wednesday night, a waste of time, live with us, and we'll be announcing, hopefully, some of the guests soon, or maybe we'll hold it off, I don't know. We'll figure it out. We're doing this for the first time, guys. Highline Ballroom, It's the Real, a waste of time, live, tickets go on sale this Friday.
But in the meantime, last night you went to the weekend show with Ray Shremmerd and Black.
I did, out there in New Jersey at the Prudential Center. It was my first time at the Prudential Center. Got some dinosaur barbecue ahead of time, so it felt like home. We both saw The Weeknd twice, maybe 2 years ago, and it's crazy to think about his career, how he went from, you know, those Toronto nights where he wouldn't even show his face, where he was a mystery, to completely owning an arena. I mean, this was like karaoke. He could have just stood there, and he did for a lot of it, just hold the microphone out and let the audience sing. It was incredible, and it got to the point now with his catalog. I don't know if this is so crazy. I could see him playing the Super Bowl. I just want to put that out there. I want to be the first to say The Weeknd plays the Super Bowl, talking about, you know, cocaine and other drugs.
Well, if Bruno Mars can do it.
I think, yeah, well, that's true. He's actually been convicted. The Weeknd. For the Super Bowl, I just want to say it right here. It was an unbelievable concert. It was really amazing, and there was not one song that he played that was like a throwaway. There was not one song.
There were no bathroom breaks where you were just like.
It really wasn't. No, it was amazing. Shout out to the He opened up with Starboy. Like, that should put into perspective. He put his lead single from his newest album as the first song. And also, his set design is incredible.
Do we know who did it?
I don't. And if anyone out there does, please let us know. Who did the stage, the set design for The Weeknd's amazing arena tour?
Well, what did it look like?
It looked like a spaceship. And, you know, everything's in triangles and they all moved separately and it was really incredible.
You can't say everything looks like triangles, because then some like internet dork is going to be like the Illuminati.
Listen, if the Illuminati's out there and you set designed The Weeknd's tour, let us know. We just want to know the facts. We're all about the facts. Also, here's a fact. Everybody has been fucking with our album. And this is people who are friends with us. This is people who were fans of us. And these are people who never heard anything we put out there musically, who went in with zero expectations and were like, yo, it's a really great album.
Yeah, well, we somehow ended up on the Workout Twerk Out playlist.
Shout out to Spotify.
With a million followers on Spotify.
We have a lot of listeners. We've been checking the stats. We have a lot of listeners in LA, in Houston. And that's beyond like all of our New York, Brooklyn, Bronx, you know, core. Guys, go press play on Teddy Bear Fresh. That's our album. We have 11 tracks on there, 11 features. Go check it out. Please let us know what you think and leave a review. That's really cool too. Leave a review on, it's on all streaming services, Tidal and SoundCloud and Spotify and Apple Music and Pandora. And
keep listing them.
Am I missing any of them? I don't
probably.
Know.
Probably. There's like Amazon Music or something. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, yeah. That, go there too.
Let's talk about who we have on the podcast today.
Static Selecta.
Static Selecta, who we've known for years.
Yeah.
We've been talking about doing this with him for a long time, and he comes through in a major way.
Well, if you guys know Static Selecta's discography, you know this is a hell of a podcast, because he's talking everybody from 2 Chainz to Kanye West to Nas to
Joey Badass,
of course, yeah. Mac Miller, Saigon, Bun B,
Sean Price.
A lot of great stories in here. Static's a great dude, and of course you can hear him on Show Off Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio. It's a great episode. I hope you guys enjoy it. Again, we'll hope to see you guys at Highline Ballroom July 26th. Tickets go on sale this Friday. Jeff, when do you want to get into the podcast?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. X-Lax, a.k.a. I Got the Moves.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Motherfucker, a.k.a. Vice President Mike Pence.
Yeah. Static Select, a.k.a. the Peter Griffin.
Yeah, and there's a waste of time, but it's the real. Bow, 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 bow. Static, what's happening?
Good, man. Busy.
Yeah, good to see you.
Absolutely.
You are wearing your Rock Nation hat.
Yeah.
You sent out a Rock Nation press release.
No, they sent that out.
They sent that out.
They sent out. I sent out the billboard.
It's official.
Yeah, no, it's 1,000,000%.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, you've been wearing that hat for a little while.
You know what's funny is it's like that Rock Nation joke. Like people are like, oh, everybody that has a Rock Nation hat thinks they.
I mean, we have ours.
We have that. Yeah.
No, but people, I've heard like little dude, you know, dudes trying to be slick say shit like that, and they were saying it to me like. Out the side of their mouth, I was like, all right, bro, stay tuned.
And you couldn't say anything.
No, you know, I could have. It's just like I wanted to wait till everything was 1,000,000% official. But
right.
Shout out to the whole team over there. It's been very welcoming.
What's the difference before Rock Nation and after Rock Nation?
I mean, really, it's to make each other better. You know what I mean? They didn't want me to go over there to feel like I'm going to blow up because I'm on Rock Nation. They want me to go over there to make them better.
Because totally.
That's what the point of working together is.
It's
a partnership, not a... You know, no one works for each other. It's like more of a let's make greatness.
That's
dope. I mean, and you do talk about this in the Billboard article, but like, how did it actually happen?
You know, shout to Christy over there. She just told me that my name was coming up in meetings, and basically, she was like, "What's going on?" I was like, "Right now, I don't really have a solid management situation." She's like, "Come on in," and here we are.
All the way up to our apartment.
That's right.
This is overdue, though. We're the guys that see each other everywhere and go, hey, let's get up and do it. Let's make it happen. We never make it happen.
Just as important to us, and it was sort of buried at the end of that Billboard article, you have worked with our favorite rapper, Titty Boy, a.k.a. 2 Chainz.
Extensively. Man, wait till you hear this stuff coming, man. I had to go off on Mass Appeal today because they put out a quote that I said. I was talking about me and 2 Chainz album, not Pretty Girls Like Trap Music.
Right.
And they're like, why did Static Selecta say that 2 Chainz is rapping like he's from Brooklyn? I was like, yo, pay it. Like, who's running these blogs? I was like, I was talking about our project.
Wait, people get things wrong on the internet?
Nah, crazy. It's like, it's out of control. I saw one thing where XXL said something, and someone was like, wow, finally news. It's like, that's how bad it is nowadays.
Yo, we broke news this week. That was crazy.
We had Rory from the Joe Budden podcast on, and he did say... that when he interned at Jeff Jam, so 10 years ago.
Oh, I already know what it is, and I didn't know that. I saw something about it, what you're talking about. It was something to do with Kanye, right?
Yeah. But the fascinating thing is that like that was a part of like a larger conversation. He just brings it up as part of his thing, and people are like starving.
Just to show you how the internet works, though, I didn't know it was through you guys, and I didn't know it was him that said it. All I saw was like... Mike Dean put like, huh?
Well, yeah. We know Mike. We know Plain Pat. We were just like, let's hit him up and just say like, hey, this is, you know, what's going on. And this was on our podcast.
They were like, I don't know. I wasn't in the meeting. So you have a Kanye story.
I mean, I was there. They were referring to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Correct. Yeah.
I was there for some of the sessions. Yeah,
you made that flight.
Yeah, I was actually out there with Nas. And I went to Kanye's for breakfast, just to go to breakfast. Consequence hit me up like, yo, Ye said come through. So I went over there And I just got out of jail. Mm-hmm. Crazy story. Like, I missed my flight. Had to book a whole new flight. Went to the airport. Landed there, and I was, like, a day late. And Nas was like, yo, where you at? Everybody was hitting me, you know, nonstop. Like, where you at? So I landed at, like, 10 a.m. And Kontz was like, yo, come to Kanye's for breakfast. Everybody's here. And I walk in. I get to the end of this, like, street, and, like, everybody's... There's no... I couldn't tell which house is which. It was three houses at the end of, like, this, like...
Cul-de-sac? Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of heard, like, voices. So I just, like, walked in the back of this, like, driveway and then in the back of the house. And I walk in, and it's a scene out of Chappelle's Show. Like, it's at this long Adams Family table. It's, you know, Common, Pusha T, Q-Tip, the RZA, Pete Rock. Like, it was out of control. And I stand there, and Kanye's like, what do you want to eat? My chefs will feed you on my waterfall. And I go out back and sit at this waterfall and eat an omelet.
Oh, my God.
It's crazy.
Did it taste better because it was, like,
it's
in that setting?
Amazing. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
How many people at the table did you know?
Every single person. Like, Steven Victor, who else? Everybody was there, man. It was crazy.
That's so wild.
But, yeah, I was out there with Nas, and we ended up going to, after a sound check, we had a show, and I was like, he's like, let's go to the studio with Kanye, and we went over there, and just, I've told the rest of the story a bunch of times. It was real dope being there for that, and, he opened up a couple sessions and had me do a couple things.
That's so great. Cool. So, like, does going to a separate island...
This is 7 years ago.
No, I know, yeah. But does that, like... Do you have to
go... a lot of cool stuff since.
And we'll get to that.
No, but we only want to talk about this.
That's right. Yeah, Kanye makes news, guys. Kanye gets his place.
Yeah.
But does going to a separate atmosphere change everything for you?
I do that all the time with people I work with. Like, me and Joey will go to Atlanta and work at Tree Sounds or go be in L.A., rent a house or do an Airbnb and, like, whatever, like... It's completely different.
But you still get something out of, like, being in your studio.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say it's all equal, actually.
Yeah?
Like, my greatest beats have been made everywhere. Like, I wouldn't say, like, my studio is the place to be to make the greatest music.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool, but I've made, like, some of my biggest records I made on planes or in the car. Like, crazy shit.
Are you ever next to someone on a plane when someone just, like, sort of taps you and is like, what are you up to?
Yeah, all the time. Someone actually tweeted me the other day and congratulated me on the Roc Nation thing. He was like, I took the flight home from South by Southwest, sat next to him. He's a cool dude. And it's funny because I remember being on the plane making beats. And he's like, what are you doing? Shout out to that dude.
Do you like talking on the plane?
Nah, I sleep on every flight. Like, if I make a beat, it's because I got a lot of sleep the night before, which is rare, but I sleep on every flight.
We had Brendan Frederick on the podcast.
Yeah, that's the whole homie.
And B. Fred said that you introduced hip hop to him when you guys went to middle school together, and then had like, you each had radio shows at your high school.
Yeah, well, no, not our high school. Let's get that clear, because I hate when I read online that I went to a prep school, which is out. It's insane.
Okay, yeah,
I went to the free local high school.
Yes.
B-Fred went to...
No, he didn't till later.
Okay.
Gotcha. He went... All right, so... You know what? Maybe you're right. He went to junior high school with me.
Yeah.
And then went to high school there.
Okay.
Because I think his pops was like a...
Professor.
Yeah, so that's how he got to go there. I mean, I'm sure his pops made good money doing it, but my point is I was like a lower middle class kid that was like... finagled his way to have a show on this prestigious radio station that, since there's no such thing as high school radio, according to CMJ and Gavin, it was a college radio station. So I was 14 years old getting serviced by all the labels.
Crazy.
So crazy.
Yeah. And when I see 14-year-olds now and they're like trying to figure out how to turn their PlayStation on, it bugs me. I was working 40 hours a week in the summer.
All right, where are you originally from?
Originally, I grew up in Methuen and Lawrence, Massachusetts. It's kind of like two towns next to each other. My grandmother had a... You know, my grandfather had a realty company in Lawrence, so they would basically watch me every day while my parents worked, and then I go back and forth. And
siblings?
Yeah, but they're both my half sister is 25 years older than me, and my half brother is 20 years older than me.
Wow.
So I didn't like grow up with any siblings. But my parents got divorced when I was 10, and that's when like everything changed. I moved to New Hampshire, which it was only like 25 minutes away from where I was at, but where I was at was like a lot more like urban. It was like heavy Latino. It was like 85% Latino. So at school, all I was hearing was, you know, Tribe and Belle Biv DeVoe and like all kinds of stuff.
What were you hearing at the new school?
Oh, when I moved?
Yeah.
Oh, kids would come up to me and be like, you're not from Compton. It was kind of place. That's where Brennan was at. So I can imagine now when he looks back, like we were really early on, especially what we were listening to. Like we were children, like little kids listening to Mobb Deep and Dr. Dre and then like all that. Like Wu-Tang was like our religion.
So how do you transition from just a listener to somebody who, you know, starts DJing? Because you were DJ
Static. Thanksgiving 1995.
And what happened?
Because I was already like, my whole life was just listening to hip hop.
Right.
But I went to New Jersey for Thanksgiving, and my aunt, you know, my cousin's like, you know about Hot 97? I was like, I keep hearing about it, but I've never heard it. And he's like, here, he put it on his like the super old school radio where you had to like find, you had to put the needle right on the right place. But it came in clear, and I just got a bunch of cassettes and just started recording it. And it was like DJ Premier, Kid Capri, Flex, and this is when like at 3 p.m. you'd hear Group Home. Like,
yeah,
it was
right. Crazy. Yeah.
So I just sat there for the whole weekend recording, and it was like, this is what I'm doing with my life. Like, there's no like, I hope I make it. Like, I never was like that. From that day at 13 years old, I was like, this is what I'm doing, and I just never changed that since.
So how far outside of Boston were you?
About an hour. And then I moved into Boston when I was we probably had a couple months left of high school, and I got my own apartment and never looked back.
When did you actually start DJing though?
Right then. And that day, Thanksgiving.
Like, what do you know about turntables? Do you know anyone
who went home, stole my dad's turntable, he got mad at me, and I had like this Lady in the Tramp record I like would try scratching. Took a while, but I just started collecting records like literally that week. When I say Thanksgiving, I'm talking about 2 days after I had Far Side Running that just came out. So I actually went to, my mother always was a hustler. She always worked at flea markets and yard sales and all that. So I went to this place she was working at, and they had Redman, Time for Some Action. They had Funk Dubious, and they had like 10 hip hop 12 inches for a dollar each. And I bought all of them and just practiced with those.
When did you get a second turntable?
I saved up. There was like this crazy place near my in my father's apartment. And there was a big pile of wood, and I got paid $300 to move this huge pile of wood from one side of the property to the other on a four-wheeler, which was kind of fun besides besides all the bugs on the wood and getting dirty. Like, riding a four-wheeler around all day for $300. It took a couple of days, but I made $300, and I went back to the source and looked up Upstairs Records and bought that package. They used to have packages like two Geminis and a Jazzy Jeff mixer for $300.
Oh my God.
And that's how I got them. But I worked for it. So now I hear dudes talking about they can't afford Beats, and I'm like, bro, you're 35, bro. Like, I never got a handle on that level. I'm proud of that though.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then do you take it to actual like live shows?
Yeah, through my first show, I was working at McDonald's. I was 15 years old. September 17th, 1997, I threw my first show. And I had some, like, at the time, you know, the underground scene, Ruckus and all that was big. Brick Records was big in Boston. And they were big everywhere, but I had 7-0 Soteric, Acrobatic, Mr. Lift, and a couple other groups come through, and they rocked for free for me just because I called them up, like, yo, let's do this show. And there was probably 200 people there. I made probably $350 after the club raped me or whatever. They probably took so much. I don't even know how much money they took, right. But I'll tell you what, I was making less than $200 a week at McDonald's.
Right.
So I make $350 in one night throwing a hip-hop show and having the time of my life.
Yeah.
Were any of these rappers, like, surprised to see a tiny person?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, when I talk to them now, like, shout out to 7L, and this, my man Checkmark from Schizophrenics, he used to always gun on me because I was, like, walking around with a Philly blunt in my ear. Like, the dude's got jokes and shit. I had, like, a headband and, like, it was just the hip, you know, was just hip-hop, man. It's like, not even I understood all of it at the time. We were kids, but it's like, they look back now and they're like, damn, it's crazy.
And did your friends, like, turn? Did they, like, understand it at a certain point? Were they like, oh, hip-hop is...
turn?
Yeah, did, like, they went from, like, not knowing, like...
Oh, no, my real friends, like, shout out to Doug and Bug Out. Like, I had kids I grew up with, like, that knew that that's what we were going to do.
Yeah?
And, you know, through time, they had families and just... didn't fall through, but they all knew from the beginning, like, I took it very serious.
Your entrance into radio
with Brennan Fredericks, man. What am I saying? 1996.
How confident were you then on the mic?
I was I don't think I hit, like, I was, I hit puberty, but I was like, yeah, it's DJ Shorty B.
Wow.
I got old tapes and I was playing like nothing but the most underground shit in the world. Like, it was just original Gun Clappers, Cool Keith, man, all the, like, Fondle and Ruckus stuff. Like, very underground show, but it was very looking inaccessible. Back, it was all, yeah. No, it was stuff you'd have to buy on vinyl. You couldn't get it on CD.
Yeah.
And you did that through high school.
Yep. And then at college, I kind of did the same thing in Boston. I would like...
Where'd you go to college?
AI, the Arts Institute, but they didn't have a radio station, so I would go to Emerson and act like I was like...
What?
Shout out to like Fax One and like...
You were acting like you were like studying.
They knew
improv
I didn't go there, but I was like, yo, let me do a guest set. And they'd have me on like at least, you know, they were doing that 5 days a week, so I'd at least get on once a week and DJ, but that was... I just loved being on the radio.
Yeah. How many people were listening?
Well, that station actually... At Emerson College is the it's still there, but they canceled the hip hop program, which is ridiculous. That's crazy. Fuck whoever did that. But at this time, they had more listeners than like any station, like any college station in the whole country. It was the biggest college station. Wow. They were having more than like as many, if not more, as like jamming at the time.
Did you know that?
Yeah, because you'd be in like Maine and you could hear it. It was like the frequency of the station was ridiculous. People in Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Maine, Mass.
Were people from like your hometown hitting you up?
Yeah, nonstop, absolutely. It's crazy because now, looking back, it's like that station was like, yo, especially all the people locked up, like that's all they listened to. Every night of the week, it was like 8 p.m., you put on 88.9.
Wow.
And it was so, like, Clark Kent used to be on there. This is when I was, like, super little, but, like, yeah. Cherry Martinez, Clark Kent, Wendy Williams, like, it was crazy.
Whoa.
This, like, back in the day, like, that was, like, 90, man, maybe 93, 94. But, like, later on, Fax One was on it, then Optimus. A bunch of, like, JCO, who went on to be, like, a club DJ and all that. But there was just years of greatness at that station. And while I was doing that, I was interning on 97, but they weren't letting me DJ on there anytime soon. Took me a year or two. It's funny because the old program director, this guy, LBD, shout out to him, man. He was giving me a hard time because I was doing the Source Street Beat, which was like Benzino's show.
Right.
But like, I wouldn't even talk to Benzino. He'd walk in the room, do the show, and leave, and like, wouldn't even talk to anybody. I don't want to talk about that dude.
Right.
But the point is LBD would be like, yo, I don't want you on the radio, because I was interning there, and he'd be like, I don't want you on air. But he had no say over that show because it was, you know, whatever situation. So he'd be like, yo, I don't want you on the air. And I'd be like, what the fuck? These people are hating on me, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, you know what? I'm not interning here no more. Not right away. I still did for a little while, and I would keep rolling with Chubb. Shout out to Chubby Chubb, man. That's like my triple OG. Like, he really put me on a lot of shit. But I just started doing so many clubs in the city. Like, I was DJing six nights a week all over Boston, from Mattapan, Roxbury, to Downtown Crossing, to State Street. And it got to the point where, like, people were calling up the station, like, yo, why isn't he on? And they came to me, like, yo, we want you to be on the radio a lot. Like, so
just because you were running shit.
I wouldn't say running shit, but I was just doing all the clubs. Exchange, Vertigo, Avalon, you know, not Avalon. That was for, like, the big joints. But what was next? So Axis, Bill's Bar, Karma, yeah, all that.
All up and down Lansdowne.
Man, I was running around Lansdowne like I owned the spot.
Well, what was like the hip hop scene in Boston like? Because when I was there, I went to BU, and I went in like 2002 or so.
I was there.
There was not much happening, for at least what I was seeing. Right. Like, I saw Green Lantern at Avalon.
See, that's like a hip hop person coming to Boston and performing. Right. That's not the scene.
Right.
The scene by 2002, I feel like a lot of the dudes graduated and were like, at least from that indie scene, where like, you know, The Perceptionists and all those dudes went on to go to Def Jux, and these guys were traveling the world making money. Like, we were all proud of it because it was off underground hip hop.
Yeah.
And I left in 2003. So like,
because I got there.
No, because you know what really messed up Boston scene is the age went from 18 to 21, and you just started seeing a lot more less shows, because when a bunch of 18-year-olds could go to Bill's Bar on Lansdowne Street and wild out and see a show, you'd pack the club. And then now it's 21+, and a lot of the college kids can't go. It's a college city, so it kind of destroyed the scene. I saw a big change then, but the age changed. Like, I've never seen a city just change the age of the clubs. That, like, I've never even heard of that.
I mean, I only knew it as 21. I just remember like having fake IDs and going in.
Yeah, when I moved there, I was 18, and I was in the club every night. Everything was 18+.
Who else was running around the city at that point?
Clinton Sparks. He was like one of my, like, I'd say a mentor. I was like following him around, just watching his hustle. Chubby Chubb, G-Spin. Mm-hmm. Me and G have known each other for, man, 20 years now. Wow. It's crazy. Like, he's my new agent in the agency group. It's kind of crazy.
Clinton Sparks was putting out mixtapes then?
Yeah, we all were. Like, we were hustling, but Clinton was like the king of the Boston mixtapes as far as the amount he was moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing my thing. Like, I was taking the Fung Wah bus for $10 every like at least 2 or 3 days a week.
Down
and going,
here?
Going to Canal Street.
Yeah.
200 CDs, getting rid of them and going back same day.
Wow. How was that business?
Then it was good. And then they started giving less for CDs. And, you know, the bootleg game took over so crazy. When 50 came out, it was just CDs went from, you used to get $3 a CD and now dudes are giving like 75 cents a dollar.
Damn.
But the mixtape game was great for a long time.
What was the verse that you were most proud to get?
Back then, just having the hostings, like Method Man, Mobb Deep. I was getting exclusives crazy. Like, I didn't really start getting official, like, you know what? The first rapper to ever do something for me was Talib Kweli in, like, 2002.
And how'd you get in touch with him?
He came to Clinton's house because we were both on the radio. We were on Hot 97 in Boston. And Talib just went there, like, to do the, you know, when artists came to Boston, Clinton would always hustle away to get them to go to his crib.
Yeah.
Which I ended up, you know, later doing, too. So
sure.
That was the whole hustle to get shit done. And he was there, and I was just like, hey, I'm on the radio, too. Can you do some of me? He's like, sure. He's like, and I play an original. He was the first one to ever rap on one of my beats that was, like, famous, you know?
What'd that feel like?
It was dope.
Yeah.
If I play it now, I mean, I'm pretty sure Kweli or me don't want to play it. Because the beat was whatever, and it was just recorded bad. Like, but, you know, it was history. I was real excited at the time he hosted the CD, put it out. I moved a lot of CDs.
What was it like recording these guys like in your home? Like what was your setup?
Well, that was at Clinton's house. My setup right. in my house was like a joke. I had like this four-track Roland 808 four-track. And like I remember Royce the 5'9 recording in my bathroom. And I was like trying to mix it right. And I just cannot. He's dropping on like a Shure like performance mic.
Right.
Like, I learned the hard way through the years how to get things to sound right. And I say I didn't get good at that till like 2006. It's funny when you look back now.
Yeah.
Like, it was only a couple of years that it took me to learn all this, like, to get nice at it. But when I look back now, like, damn, it's just weird. You know what I mean? Like, you totally. Look at 10 years back then was forever. And now it's like, that shit just flew by.
You're on the radio at the time.
Yeah.
Was there one hip hop station there? Or were
nah,
there?
You got Jammin', which was like the big crossover hip hop
station. That was 94.5?
Yeah. And then you got Hot 97, which was like the more urban station.
Right. And did you guys go back and forth? Was there sort of
yeah,
like
there
a...
Yeah, there was all kinds of... Like, I wasn't even allowed on the property of Jammin'. Because I was doing street team. So I would bring like... I remember I brought Premier there with Guru. The day I met DJ Premier, I had already known Guru for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought them there, and like they were like, shout out to G-Spin, because he let me in the building. It was probably my first time going there, even though I was on the other station. And that was like a rare thing, because before that, like the DJs didn't even talk to each other. It was like, it's kind of like in New York, like I'll flex and you know, Clue
are. Yeah.
It's like almost down to like beef sometimes. Like I remember there was some crazy situations, but looking back, it was all stupid. Dudes are getting like $8 an hour to a mix show. Like, come on, man.
What slot did you have on the radio?
I actually, I would do like fill-ins. Like I'd fill in for Clinton, and then Chubby Chubb went on tour with Khalees, and he was gone for like a couple months. So I was on 6 days a week filling in for him. I'm talking 5 o'clock drive time every day, weekends. Like, so every artist that came through, I would have on my show.
Yeah.
And that was like, when he came back, I was like, I'm out. I'm going to New York. Because what am I going to do? Wait for you to go on tour again? Like, they're not going to give me a permanent slot. Even if they did, it would be one day a week.
Right.
So I was like, I hit my glass ceiling here. Like, it's time to go to New York.
Do you think that older DJs saw the work you were putting in?
Well, this goes to the convo about the controversy behind what Joey said on Hot 97.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see it?
With Ebro?
He's like, y'all need to have more... young DJs and all that.
Yeah.
And Ebro said some real shit I really respect him for. He's like, you got to come take my slot.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely agree with Ebro. And I told Joey my whole like story of that. Because that's what radio is. That's what DJing is. That's what MCing is. But it's a different generation with the internet now because they kind of skip all that.
Right.
With the whatever. But my point is like, you got to take that slot. And I feel like I always had to earn my spot no matter where I was on the radio. Even with Shade 45, like that was Clinton's show when I moved to New York,
mm-hmm.
Smash Time Radio. Then I started filling in the last 2 hours. Then I started doing the whole show when he was on the road. Then he started, you know, making like other kinds of music, and it just didn't make sense for him to be on Shade 45. And they gave half the show to Lip Service, which was Angela Yee and Leah.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, we only got 2 hours now. And it was still Smash Time, and then they were like, yo, we don't know what to do with the show. I was like, yo, I was doing my thing, breaking artists and all that, and Paul and Reef were like, yo, you can have the whole slot. Like, what do you want to call it? So, like, I earned show off radio.
Right.
Because a lot of dudes in New York were like, yo, how the fuck's this kid that came from Boston have his own show on Shade 45?
Right,
like,
yo,
bro, I paid dues and earned that show. So it's like, no matter what, you got to earn your slot, especially as a DJ.
Did you feel like Boston was a super small space at that point?
Yeah, I just felt like I did every single thing I could have done there. And I still feel that way. Like, you know, especially watching things how they've changed since. It's like that station ended up closing. What if I stayed? You know what I mean?
Right.
I ended up being on Jammin' later, but I would do it from New York and
right.
send it.
So when you were coming to New York, what did you know about, like, the subways? What did you know
about? I knew about pretty much all of it. And in the first couple of months, just the people I knew here, like, I was doing the street marketing stuff. It was like, shout to Biz, who's super OG from Queensbridge. He would, like, in one day, we would hit 5 boroughs with mixtapes. So I learned the whole city in like 6 months.
And where were you living?
In the Bronx and Riverdale.
Wow.
Which
wow.
people get mad when you call the Bronx, but whatever, it's the Bronx. But it was a nice neighborhood. My boy Doug, who I was talking about earlier, he moved down there with his fiance, and they were going to Manhattan College. So I got an apartment in the building for like $1,000. It was huge, too. Like, I got a really good deal on the apartment. And, you know, I was just hustling out of there. And then I lived there for about 3 years, and I've been in Brooklyn ever since.
Do you have an idea of, like, what you want to do first in terms of, like...
The mixtape game was so out of control still that, like, that's all I was doing. I was going and getting exclusives. Like, I would see rap... Like, I saw one of the first times I met Nas, he's like, how the fuck do you have this? Like, I was getting exclusives at a crazy rate. So I was competing with a lot of these guys.
How are you getting the exclusives?
Relationships. That's all it's always been. I remember having Kanye through the wire, and it was like the first version where like he literally was rapping with his mouth shut.
Yeah.
And I was at Rockefeller, and Donna Grimm's like, he's like the new guy. You sure you want that? I was like, nah, I know who he is. I heard it. I was like, I'll take that. And look at the rest. It's crazy to watch what, you know, he's done.
And did anyone come down hard on you for any exclusives?
Yeah. There was times I was getting phone calls like so-and-so is looking for you, and I'd actually reach out, and they'd be like cool about it. They'd be like, no, I'm happy. We were just wondering where you got it. Like one time someone's like, yo, if I was you, I wouldn't be in New York. And it ended up turning into one of the biggest situations in my life because I'm not the kind of dude to be like, yo, I heard so-and-so got a problem. Be like, oh, I hope I don't see them. Like I'm like the kind of dude that like I want to either squash it or know what it is immediately.
Yeah.
So I reached out right away to his manager, and I was like, yo, I heard this. And he's like, yeah, he wants to talk to you, but he's like, he wants you to do his mixtape. It's funny how people hype things up.
You're established in the mixtape game in New York, but have you reached out yet and started doing live, you know, clubs or parties?
Yeah,
and
the first club I did was Exit. Then I was doing like
that's a big club.
That's a big club.
Yeah, but I was doing The Roof, which was like, it was cool though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a wake up call when I moved here, and like the 4 a.m. thing is a lot different than the 1:45 thing. So, like, starting to DJ at, like, 11 o'clock, and you got... This is vinyl. Serato's not out yet. And I show up with a couple crates, and I'm, like, rocking, and then it's like, yo, by the time 1:30 comes, you're like, oh, shit. A lot of time left. You know...
Did you have a friend who carried the crates?
Well, I had homies that helped.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. I used to carry it. See, I'm proud of that. Nowadays, people are like, oh, I didn't carry no crates. It's like, then you didn't pay dues.
Right, right, right.
I carried Kid Capri's crates a bunch of times.
Really?
Chubbs, Clinton's, like G-Spins, all the... That's how I got in the club a lot of the times, especially if it was like a private party. Or I used to go to crazy parties, and that's the only way I was getting in.
What were these crazy parties?
Man. Hundreds. Like, I remember going to Mariah Carey's... it was like her nephew's Harvard graduation at this like hotel in Boston, and Chubb was DJing it. And like this shit was super, super private, obviously. It was in the lobby, like the restaurant part of the hotel. And you know, everything in Boston closed at like 1:45.
Yeah.
It went to like 5 a.m. And at 4 a.m., they opened up the gates and the kitchen opened. It was just like all you could eat, all you could drink the whole night. And Tom Brady showed up, and he was like the rookie. And I remember him and Mariah just leaving the room. It was like, oh, shit, okay. I don't know what else happened. But I just remember everybody in the party was like, yo, Tom just left with Mariah.
Right, Drew Bledsoe didn't do that. So.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the first times I ever heard his name. It was that early.
Tom Brady.
It must have been 2000, 2001.
But what were you playing like on the rooftop at Exit?
What was it, 2004? It was like, I don't know, Lloyd Banks on Fire.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Okay, so you're playing around New York. You're doing the mixtape thing.
It was all before my production.
All before.
Yeah.
So when do you... And Talib Kweli in 2002 jumped on one of your originals.
Yeah, but nothing since then. That was like... I wasn't even making beats. That's the thing.
So when did you start making beats?
Technically in 1995, but I never took it serious till 2005.
So 2005. Yeah. What's the impetus behind that?
Just doing what I do at home, and I was just messing around, and me and Terminology made a record, and AZ came over for me to do his mixtape, and he heard it, and he's like, what's that? I was like, oh, some of me and Term did. AZ's like, nah, I want it. To this day, so AZ's like, yo, tell Term I'll do a verse for him if I can have that record. Term's like, well, can I still put on my mixtape, and you can just have it for your album? He's like, all right, cool. To this day, AZ still doesn't know the verse for Turner. But it's all good. That was my first check. Shout out to Koch for that, even though Koch owes me a lot of other money. But so that was like my first placement. I had something on KRS-One's album, and it was like an interlude before that. And then the AZ record, it's called Animal, was my first placement on like a, you know, a internationally placed album. After that, still didn't take it that serious. I was still killing it with the mixtapes, doing John Legend's first mixtape and G-Unit, Akon, and all this stuff. And the day that all changed, I don't know, you might have to Google this date. It was the day Drama got arrested, 2007.
Whoa.
Oh.
That changed everything in the world. Like, I was calling places and they were acting like they never sold my mixtapes, they never sold no mixtapes. I called Clinton. I go, you know, he owned Mix Unit. I was like, what are you going to do about Mix Unit? He goes, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, all right, bro. That's where we're going. I was like, yeah. I gotta figure something out.
Is this a secured line?
My income's like about to be out of here, because I was making a lot. I was paying all my bills off between the street team stuff and the mixtapes, but the mixtapes was out of control. I'm talking about shipping out thousands a week.
Oh, man. And so then that just stops.
Over. Instantly. Like, instantly.
Yeah.
One MTV headline, it's over. It's like losing your job. Even though you go out of the hustles, it's like, that's like losing a job. So, I was like, yo, I gotta start learning how to not suck at beats. Like, I gotta get nice.
Like, was that the only other thing that you thought about, or were you like, do I go straight and like? No, yeah, I was like, am I gonna get arrested?
Me and Mike had just dropped the CD and sold like 20,000-30,000 in one day.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what's gonna happen? Like, I knew all the legalities of. I went to school for music. Like, I knew everything we were doing. Yeah, it's like selling weed and you get caught. Like, fuck, I knew what I was doing. But I knew what was going on, and it's just like, I was like, I have to start making my own records. Plus, hip-hop was starting to really suck. Like, I was trying to make mixtapes, and I couldn't put them out the same volume because shit started to, you know, all these New York dudes started to act like they were from Atlanta, and it was like, it was frustrating.
Yeah. Well, did you play any of those records, like, while you were out?
Nah. Just because you wanted to hear them? I never supported that shit ever. Right. Like,
but do you support it now?
Nah. I mean, I'll support, like, Nah. I'm serious, though. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, the last record. Like, if 50 Cent makes, like, a bounce record and it's dope, that's cool. Because 50 always did that since the beginning. But it's like, if someone from Brooklyn's, like, talking about, like, swag surfing and shit like that, like, I ain't fucking with that. I can't do it. And I like club records. I like the Dirty South records.
Yeah, right.
I just don't like when people, like...
Yeah, act out of their comfort
zone.
Like,
Big Pimpin', amazing. Yeah, right. Because it was done uniquely. When dudes start changing the way they talk and, like, who they are from what... Like, I just don't like that shit.
How did you find your sound? How long did it take for you to really figure out what a Static Selecta song...
I had to step out the shadows, because my whole life I was looking up to Premier and Pete Rock and, you know, Q-Tip and the RZA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I had to find it. And to me, I think now it's like a mix of all of them on a 2017, like, updated... the answer is what Preem took from Marley Marl and those guys, and then Alchemist took from Primo. I took from all of them and made my own thing. So it's like a boiling pot of hip-hop.
Who's the first person to really recognize that, you think?
Really, Preem. Like, as soon as I moved to New York, he was like, yo, come through the studio anytime, because I was hooking him up with a lot of exclusives for his radio show, and it was like, he would just let me come and watch, and he doesn't do that with a lot of people, so I gotta give him credit for that.
That's his studio was down on like 30...
D&D. It was headquarters at that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 39th. Man. 37th.
Yeah. How do you get beats to people? How do they come to you?
Well, the mixtape thing made it a lot easier, because people knew... Like, I would get called... So I started working on my first album. This is 10 years ago, and I was like, I want to do this album. The mixtape game's dead. I have to put out real music and sell it. So I started working on it. I would get like some favors. I started getting certain names coming through. And at the time, I was DJing for Q-Tip too. So Q-Tip did a verse for my album, which made like, it made it super. He doesn't do verses for like anybody.
Right.
So I did a song with him and Styles P and Term on it. And then I started, you know, the features started coming in. And I remember getting a call from Freeway. And I'm like, who's this? He's like, Free. I'm like, Free who? He's like, Freeway. I'm like, what's up? He's like, I heard you working on an album. Like, that shows you... You know, he was on his hustle, and that like really opened my eyes up. Like, wow, people are watching.
What was it like working with Freeway?
He's by far the quickest, like most professional rapper I've ever worked with. The way he's like, I've seen him come up with like a whole song in 5 minutes in his head without writing one word, and he'll be talking about what's going on in the room. Like, I've never seen anyone else do it like that. He's one of a kind with that.
The slowest, by the way, in comparison, AZ. AZ still owes.
Nah, but hey, AZ's pretty dope in the studio.
Yeah. That first project you did through...
Brick Records. Shout out to them. I did the first three albums through them, which was pretty much Land Speed turned into Traffic.
The difference between putting out a mixtape and putting out an album for you?
Ah, it's crazy different. I mean, I started dealing with the whole politics of retail and seeing people spend money on like advertising and placements in certain stores that you didn't even agree on. And then Brick was good about it, but it was like, I was getting calls from certain artist managers like, yo, you can't put that out without getting clearance. And I never had to deal with any of that.
So. Right.
And you'd be surprised, like the biggest herb of artists are the ones that give you the biggest problem. Like the most superstar dudes, no problem at all.
Yeah.
Like, doing a record with Bun or Snoop or whoever, that shit is a walk in the park.
Right.
But like some new guy that like just feeling himself is the biggest headache ever. Especially his teams, because a lot of the time they're new at it too. Mm-hmm. Or they're taking themselves too serious. And it's like, yo, bro, chill.
Yeah. Did you have like a team around you? Or was
it I've always had, you know, I got a partner to show off and like, you know, I got Term. And the whole crew from back in the day was always around. But I did a lot of the majority of the stuff. Like I mix and master all my own shit. All the beats. I got certain players that come through once in a while and play on songs, but I've been pretty much a one. That's why this Roc Nation thing's amazing, because I've been doing everything forever, and now I have like a real PR department. I've had different publicists through the years, but now like this is a machine behind you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So it's like if you need building. Anything, it's like, hey.
Are there any records that you wanted to sample back then that you saved until now that you have Roc Nation to go and like beat down doors?
I would sample. I never even cleared samples till later on. Knock on wood. I was doing whatever I wanted for a long time, but you know now I have to do everything pretty much legit.
Yeah.
Or just get stuff that's so rare and chop it a certain way. You know the game, man.
And what was it like? What was it like bringing people through your home studio? Now you can go into any studio, whatever, and do work anywhere. But like having them come over to your place.
Yeah, that was like an experience even for the artists. Like a lot of cats like Saigon would come through and be like, yo, I like going here more than any other. Like they'd just come over and drink and party and barbecue. That's how I got down with Action. Joey and them used to come over as like 16 years old, like in the backyard. My crib in Bushwick from 2007 to 2014, legendary.
Yeah.
Like, we had the basketball hoop. We had pools all the time. The landlord would come and cut the pool and water would go everywhere.
Where do you live?
Now I live in Williamsburg. Yeah. In like a grown-up apartment. Yeah. But back then it was like the Carter.
Yeah.
No, for real, for hip-hop. Like,
did the neighbors know what was going on?
What? Absolutely. The neighbors would party with us most of the time. There's a couple of haters in the building. But now that building, I'm talking about music going from 8 p.m. till noon.
Oh, my God.
Like, who were your neighbors? Like Johnny Shipes?
Yeah, right. He called the cops. Now. they were all cool, man. Shout out all the neighbors in 41 Melrose. That's a legendary building.
Yo, let's talk about some of the people who came through. Mac Miller.
Yeah.
Right?
First time in New York.
When he rode the subway, right? And
that was this like second or third time. Okay. The first time he came through, he had a show at SOB's.
Yeah, yeah.
And he came through before the show, and we just started making a record. And I remember he was like, he's like, yo, I got to go do a show. And we were like, nah, just chill. And he's like, nah, I'll come back. And we were all like, he ain't coming back. And he came back after the show. He was like, because he turned 18 about 3 days before that.
What'd you know about him?
Well, he had come on my radio show first. Mm-hmm. And he had never been up here. And I was like, yo, let's get in the lab. And he was like, what? He's like, you and Term my favorites. I'll come through anytime. He was like, literally, like, you're my favorite.
That's dope.
And he had all my beats on his old mixtapes.
Yo, he just wanted to come back to your apartment.
Yeah.
Yo, but the apartment was legendary. Yeah, we were over there. I mean, we were wilding, man. He was, like, you know, a kid. I never hung out with an 18. I always used to hang out with older dudes.
Right.
Yeah, but like, you were impossibly young.
This is crazy, though. I was just talking about this the other day. As I got more, like, busy in hip-hop, I went from hanging out with, like, all the older dudes to now... I started hanging out with Mac Miller, and I'm like, damn, this is crazy. He's only 18. Then Joey, it's like, damn, he's only 16. Then the kid Astro was coming through, and he was like, I think he was like barely 16. And then I did a song with that kid Chris Miles, and he's 14 in my crib while I'm drinking Hennessy. I'm like, bro, what is going on in my life? Like, my hip-hop Benjamin Button's not cool right now.
Were you ever just like, what do I even talk to like this kid about?
Nah, because he was so hip-hop, he reminded me of myself. Like, it was just, he was down for whatever.
How about Action Bronson?
That's a story where I play a lot of pool in LES, right? And I was at Max Fish, the old Max Fish. Mm-hmm. And my man Paulie was like, you know, I hear this every night. Yo, my man's nice. You should check him out. I've been hearing that for years. So I'm like, all right, bro. And he goes, I'm like, what's his name? He's like, Action Bronson. I was like, this is an interesting name. It's not a name you forget when right. someone that you know tells you. So I was like, all right, bro, I'll check him out. And I didn't really have no intent of really taking it that serious. I thought he'd just be another rapper. And I think it was Lord Sear. He sent me a video. It was the Shiraz video. And I was like, oh, okay, this is what my man was talking about. And I immediately just DM'd Action. I seen he was following me. I DM'd him. I was like, yo, come through the studio. He's like, say when. And there was a snowstorm. And I'm talking about, it was one of those storms where like everything was snowed in.
Yeah.
So like we literally got snowed in my crib. The downstairs like porch was like feet of snow.
Legendary.
And I hit Action like, yo, come through. And he's like, I'm on the way. He had never been on any blog. Like he never, you could Google him, and the only thing that's gonna come up is probably like a J Love mixtape or something.
Right.
Like, cause he was down with that crew. And he showed up wearing like crazy looking shoes and shorts and the fuck and standing in the 2 feet of snow.
Right.
And I'm like, yo, this guy's, he's like me kind of, because I'm all about the shorts, but I was like, yo, he's great. I wouldn't wear him in that weather though.
Right.
And he shows up like that, and that's like my first memory. And he came through and just got on a record, and I was like, watch this. And we put out the record, and like before he left my crib, it was on Two Dope Boys, oh, and like Rap Radar and all that. And he was like, he's like, bro, I've never been on the internet. Like, I've never been on a blog. And I was like, yo, we should do a couple joints. So he came through, and I was like, let's do an album. And he's like, I'll get you a check. And he broke his leg. So he was like on crutches. He broke his leg working at his father's restaurant.
Right.
And he was just like, yo, I need money. And I was like, I'll get a check. Let's do an album. And we did Well Done. And
crazy.
You know, that label didn't really handle things right and kind of left a bad taste in both of our mouths. But at the end of the day, people loved that album. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the rest is history. We did a whole bunch of shit.
Man. That's so crazy. All of that.
Yeah. Talk about Saigon.
Saigon is one of those dudes that hit me up early, like, yo, where the fuck did you get that record? He hit me on MySpace, and he's like, yo, fam, you played that record on your show. He's like, where'd you get that?
How seriously do you take, like, MySpace messages at those times?
Well, from Saigon? I was like, I met Saigon actually in the pool in the Bahamas at the Mix Show Power Summit.
Really?
Yeah, and he was like, it was his first time, like, I think, leaving the country on some hip-hop shit. Wow. Like, he had just signed to Mark Ronson and all that. And we, like, kind of got cool there, but then all of a sudden we get back and he's sending me like crazy messages on MySpace like, yo, I got beef with you, blah blah blah. And I was like, bro, the dude that did the beat gave it to me and said I could play it. It's not my fault. Scram Jones. Yeah. And, nothing came out of that. And then we ended up getting cool years later, and he came through to do, no, what's funny is he came through to remix some like strip club record. Well, that's not what I do. And
right.
He knew that. So he comes through and I just start playing beats. He's like, yo, put the mic on. And he did like a whole song in like one take. I'm like, bro, we should just keep going. And he's like, yeah, whatever. We went out and partied. We went to some hotel party in Manhattan. Wilding out.
Mariah Carey.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No. Yeah. This is like some debauchery, like just random like craziness. And it was like a pool party at the Grace Hotel. I don't know if you guys know the Grace Hotel.
Yeah, sure.
Like, we used to just stay there every weekend and invite mad girls and shit. It was like 2009.
You had a pool at home.
Nah, not them. And so we went back again, and he's like, yo, just start putting on beats. And we started going and going, and we made a whole album in one day.
And didn't you Ustream that?
No, it was before Ustream. It was like 6 months before people started doing that. But I wish we recorded it, because no one believed us. Like, yeah. XXL, everybody was reviewing it, giving it good reviews. But they would always put some smart ass shit like, did they really do in 24 hours? No one knows. Man, let me tell you something. So many people came through and were like witnesses of that. Like Little Fame from MOP came through. My man Puerto Rico Rob. So many people came through and just seen us working, knocking out songs in like an hour.
Man.
And it's like, we really did that, and it was historic. And
do you like recording with like a bunch of people around?
Yeah. Not now, but back then. Back then, there would be 30 people in my house at all times.
Why not now?
Because we just, man, I moved. This is the first time in my life, the last 2 years, that my studio has not been in my basement.
Right.
Like, my whole life, I've had the studio in my apartment. So I'm adjusting to it. I'm in like a building with other studios in it, and mm-hmm. it only fits a certain amount of people, you know what I mean? But it's a lot less fuckery. It's still fuckery, but yeah. A lot less. There's not as much hard drugs and shit.
Did you have Bun come through?
Bun's like my brother.
Yeah.
Like, he's like my big brother.
Yeah.
He's been through a million times. A million times.
Styles.
We've shot a whole video. Styles has been through mad times. Joel Ortiz, Royce,
Sean Price.
Sean lived there. Like, Sean was there all the time. Sean, even in my new apartment, Sean was like, giving me advice about being a father right before she came. One of his last pictures he put up was a picture of my daughter. Like, it was like his second to last picture he put up. And, you know, I miss that dude every day.
Yeah, can you talk about what Sean Price was like, not just as an artist, but as a person?
To me, he was a better person than artist. Like, his towards the end, he was just, like, rapping. Like, he would do verse for anybody for a certain amount of money. Like, he was just, like, doing rap because it was his job. But, like, as far as him as a person, he that's why people hung out with him. Like, he was the man. Like, the rap shit was easy to him. He could do it in his sleep. You know what I mean? He could just spit a verse. All right, what's next? Like, he didn't... He wasn't trying to act like he was, you know, more elite than anyone. He just knew he was. He'd rather do a song with someone that wasn't even that good, mm-hmm. that he liked, than someone that was, like, the illest lyricist ever that he just didn't like. I've seen him choose, like, when I was asking him, he would always pick, like, funny names where I'd be like, yo, who you want to do a song with for the album? Like, even the fact, like, Mac Miller can really rap, but the fact that he was like, I want to do a song with Mac Miller on this is like, those are two people from two different completely walks of life that they got along great, and it was like, it made complete sense when we did the song.
And you guys shot that the video.
It was so fun, man.
Which we were at, that was at Rock the Bells.
The sound set.
Oh, that was at Sound Set?
Sound Set, shout out to them,
Because it looked like... I thought it might have been at Rock the Bells, but Schoolboy Q's in that video.
Yeah, Evidence, Schoolboy Q, who else? I think Alchemist, Joey and them.
Yeah,
it was fun, man. Sean is like, he was just like, he'd come over my house and just be like, yo, put on a beat, and sit there for like a couple hours and be like, bro, you done your verse? He'd be like, I'm not writing a verse, bro. I'm watching the game. I'd be like, all right, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Trying to get my album done. Sean was a fun dude, man.
Talk about your relationship with Terminology.
That's like, you know, that's the bro, man. We were born in the same hospital the same year, and we met, you know, we met when we were like 16, but we were kind of, we were from the same, you know, area a couple miles apart, and we were like on the same mission. Like, we were both like, he had the same attitude as me, like, yo, I don't want to do this. I'm going to do this. And we just, you know, when I moved to New York, he just started coming to New York all the time, and then he eventually moved to New York too, but it was like, he just... You know, first time I've ever left the country was with him. The first time, there was a lot of firsts where like we were just always rolling together, like getting the Primo shit done. The Watch How Go Down record we did was like one of the biggest 12-inch on my label.
How does Joey Badass come into your life?
Johnny Shipe sends me an email. Yo, I signed this new kid, Joey Badass, and I was like, when I heard it, I pictured like a white like punk kid, and I'm like, when I heard the name, I mean, not his music, but when I heard the name, I was like, word. I was like, I don't know. I was like, with the dollar signs, like, I don't know. So he sent me Survival Tactics video,
and you press play.
Yeah, I press play. Of course, nah. Yeah. I've known Shipes forever. Shipes used to manage Clinton. Like, I've known Shipes forever. Yeah. And I press play, and I was like, oh yeah, I like the energy. But I was like, yo, they rhyming over the what was the name of that group? What the fuck's the name of the? It's an underground group from like Canada or some shit. Not Swollen Members. It's going to bother me. It's an underground group from the 90s. Right. They were rapping over the beat, and I was like, yeah, but that's not a real song. I was like, I want to hear a real song. Because at this point, everybody raps on everybody's beats. I was like, anytime I hear a new artist, I want to hear a song. Right. So I was like, send me a song. Time goes by. I sent him a couple beats. He's like, Joey picked this one, but he never did it. And then they sent me Hard Knock. And I was like, oh, shit, this is dope.
You knew nothing about him other than
CJ. And I just saw that. I was like, nah, these kids are special. So,
were they still white?
Nah, not after Hard Knock. Nah. That So, I seen the video. Oh, no, but they weren't. I mean, I saw the video for Survival Tactics and figured it out.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Steez, man. His energy was so ill. So, one of like Shipes' assistants or something was like, yo, can you do scratches on Joey's project? And I was like, yeah, tell him to come too. So Joey shows up with like six kids. And they're all like literally kids
in my
basement. And I'm like, this is the time I'm talking about where I'm like, yo, what am I doing? Just hanging out with mad kids. But I like the energy. You know, they all have like the skateboards and all that. They're like climbing down the back wall and shit. And I do the scratches. And he's like, yo, good luck. Like, I'm out. And I was like, it was like in a Bronx Tale. I was like, close the door. I was like, no, you're not. No one's leaving. I was like, I'm playing some beats. And I threw on the first beat I put on, ended up being Don't Front. They were like, yo, put the mic on. And him and CJ just went back and forth and did it in one take.
Wow.
Like, they obviously had the song written already in their head. Like, they had been practicing it, but they didn't know what beat to put it to.
Yeah.
So, like, I did the scratches in front of them. They were all just like, wow, like, we could do songs this fast. And that ended up being on 1999. And... the rest is just like history. They used to come, like Kirk came through to get scratches, and Kirk was a kid. Like he was way younger than the rest of them. And Steve's came through and did Like Water and Interlude 47, and then like we put the mixtape out. Well, not we, but they put the mixtape out right after. And that's when the conversation came up, like I was going to be his DJ and all this other stuff. We were working it out, and they dropped it. And like 2-3 days later, Steve's gone, man. It's crazy. I will never forget, man, waking up on Christmas Eve and getting all the texts, like, what? I was looking at Steve's like he was about to be that dude. Like, this kid was the quiet kid in the corner that was like, mic's on, came over, did his thing, and he was done. Like, I was blown away by these dudes. And it just, that put a whole, man, fucked up a lot of shit. Steve's was going to be something very, very special. Like, they were supposed to be Batman and Robin, you know what I mean? And it just, seeing someone that young too, it's like I've lost a lot of friends, but like that's a young age to go, man, without even living life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What has changed for those guys in the last three, four years?
I've done probably 600 shows with Joey.
But I mean, tired of him now?
But we're going on tour July 8th.
But they've grown into you know,
but
real.
Yes, I'm tired now.
Yeah.
Nah, I love Joey.
But they've grown into like real, like human beings.
I watched them go from like, basically kids doing dumb shit a lot of the time. They were smart kids, though. Like, they were way more mature than I was at that age. Don't get it twisted. I had my own apartment and all that, but I was, like, getting way more drunk than they were getting.
Yeah.
Now they get drunk. But when I first met them, they weren't getting as drunk. But, I was, like, I've watched them literally grow up in front of my eyes.
Like, as a producer, though, are you, like, getting involved with, like, the themes of their music? And
1,000,000%.
Yeah.
And me and Joey, we're actually about to drop something special.
Yeah?
Yeah, no one knows what it is, but...
Do you know?
Yeah.
Does he know?
By the time... When's this come out?
This comes out on Tuesday.
Tuesday. Okay, yeah. Maybe a couple days later. We'll see. But okay. We're about to drop something. Summertime.
Yeah?
Yeah. And he just dropped the album. Like,
yeah.
Number one rap album in the country.
And he's about to do Summer Jam main stage.
Yeah, we kind of got to drop it before Summer Jam, so you're going to hear it real soon.
Yeah.
Never could be too lit. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah?
Hit record shit.
Crazy. How are you prepping for Summer Jam?
Well, we have like 15 minutes, so probably like in the car on the way there. It's not like something you do rehearsal for. We do this. Like, we've been traveling the band lately, and... really stepped, like we just did Rolling Loud. We were one of the headliners of that, and it was like real dope.
Did you get to spend any time down there, or was it in and out?
No, I was there for like 4 days. I stayed longer than anybody.
Because we heard it was like really, really well done down there.
Really, it was great. Run. So basically, Diddy watched us rock, right? And Joey had met Diddy during Kendrick's performance. Diddy was like, yo, come watch it with me.
Whoa.
And they ended up getting real cool. So the rest of the week, we were like in the club with him every night. We had his crib. Like, I don't want to give away too much, but we had like a real good time. Puff was real welcoming, and just the calm. Like, we were at the crib, and it was just me, Joey, and Puff, like on the water talking about, like, I kind of fell back and let them. The way Puff was talking to Joey was like reminiscent of like that Bad Boy, like Brooklyn. It was a good vibe. I was like, you know what? I'm going to just sit here and listen. And I have my little sayings, but something amazing is going on with that. Joey's been in the lab with Swiss Beats. Like, this is all stuff you can see on Instagram. I'm not like telling anybody.
Right. Yeah.
What else? He's been building with a lot of people, and it's like, what's about to happen next is gonna be great.
He's gonna get a revolt show.
I think he just did one. Actually, I don't know about his own show, but he just shout out to Revolt.
Had you met Puff before?
Yeah,
but not like, you know what it was, is this time Puff, like the second I walked up, knew what it was and acknowledged it. Through the years, I mean, I was hanging out one back in the day of those crazy parties. Those time I was hanging out with Puff all the time.
Oh man,
my cousin used to work for Nicole Kidman.
What?
And like we. She would. This is when I was like 18, 19. I'd be in New York just hanging out with like Puff and Maxwell and Lenny Kravitz and shit. And it was like,
what?
Like wilding out. Like, I got a story. The first time I ever met Puff, right? I went to the bathroom. We were at this restaurant. It was Nicole Kidman, Lenny Kravitz, and my cousin, and my other cousin, Megan. And we would shout to Ellie, who worked with Nicole and all that. And we were just chilling in this restaurant in Lafayette. And I was like, yo, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And I come back, and I sit down, and I just look up, and Puff's sitting across from me. Like, he just showed up. He's like, yo, what's up, man? We going out? I was like, yeah. So he had, like, two Escalades, and, like, he had a Ferrari. So it's like a Ferrari, two Escalades in the back of it. He's like, get in. And we all get in the trucks, and we're following Puff. And we get to this light on 7th Avenue, and the shit turns green. This is at, like, 10:30 at night, 11 o'clock. and that it's a green light on 7th Ave, Midtown. And he gets out of the Lamborghini, comes over and goes, yo, you want to hit the blunt? And he gets back in. Like, that's my first memory, is hanging out with Buck. And then we walked in the club, and his, like, arm was around me and shit. It was, like, it was bugged out as a kid, you know what I mean?
Do you bring this up, like, with him?
No, I brought up a couple old stories. Because I brought up, there's another funny Puff story. I brought this up to him in his crib. There's the video for Nasty Girl.
Yeah.
Obviously Biggie, but featuring Jagged Edge and Nelly and yeah. Puff. And I went to the video shoot. This is like a week after I moved to New York. Maybe, no, it was a little bit after that. But anyway, we go to the video shoot and everybody's chilling. And Sean Perez is like, yo, I think you might be the DJ in the video. Because I'm on, at this point, I'm on syndicated radio across. We left out a lot, but anyway,
yeah.
I'm on the radio across the world at this point. And they were like, yo, I think you're going to be the DJ in the video. So I'm like, yeah, they were fitting me. Like, they had stylists putting on Sean John and shit. Like, shit way too tight for me. All this, like, crazy shit. And I'm standing behind the turntables, and I got this girl from out of town that came and visited. I'm like, I'm just, like, stunned at the time. And I'm like, I probably had, like, $300 in the bank. And I was like, I just felt good. I was like, yo, I'm about to be in this Puff video. And Pharrell, everybody's there. Everyone's there. And, all of a sudden, they're like, yo, we're ready to shoot the scene. Yo, Green Lantern, get behind the turntable. So when you watch the video now and they show Green Lantern in the video, my arm's next to him like, hey, look at me. But you can't see me. You can just see my arm. Like,
why'd they fit you for all the
only white arm in the video.
Why'd they put you in like velour or whatever? He got there like
last minute.
Oh, my God.
And then
God.
In the other video, you can see me clapping in the background. I was like, God damn it. Shout out to Green. That's my
yo, bro. Green's the best.
That's amazing.
But I told Puff that story and he's like, oh, he's like, that was a good time. You know, it's dope to see where he's at with hip hop right now, working on new music, and he got a great vision right now.
So, Shade 45 and Sirius overall, Sirius XM yeah. is it's a universal thing. This isn't like just
nah, it's
Boston,
North America.
Oh,
so
okay,
it's like
yeah.
a lot of people in Mexico have Puerto Rico. Canada's huge with it. Everybody in Canada has it because for some reason Canada has like newer cars than us all the time. but all over America has it. We have millions and millions of listeners,
which is amazing. Yeah. But it's not just like local for you. So when you play
you
your,
can't even think like that,
right? So
I have guests on. They're like, yeah, tomorrow night I'm in Brooklyn, Broadway, and in Broadway, Marcy. Like, bro, what? We got people listening in Winnipeg. Like, no one.
Yeah, but they can fly in.
One thing to promote your show, like, yo, I got a show. But the way they talk sometimes is like we're on fucking NYU. It's right. Like, bro, this shit is. A lot of people listening. And then other times people fuck up me like, yo, let me start again. You can edit this, right? I'm like, bro. I get really upset now when people fuck up freestyle because it's like, yo, man, this is the major leagues. And right. people don't get it, especially with this. Someone could be popping on a blog, blow up, and like the next week they're on the biggest radio station in the world.
Yeah.
And that never used to go like that. So now like these dudes have never rapped on college radio or even on internet radio, and they got millions of people listening, and they always want to freestyle at the end, like really off the top of the head, really, and just choke. And everybody in the room is just like awkwardly silent. It's like, bro, this is not the place to do that. Like,
right.
Come prepared. If you really can freestyle, do it. But if you can't, don't do it.
Do you respect people who say they can't freestyle?
Yeah, but at least have a verse.
Right.
Like, if you don't want to freestyle, I don't want you to if you don't want to, but... I also don't want you to if you want to and you suck.
Yeah.
Well, talk about some of the great freestyles that you've had up there.
Some of the best ever. Like, my show is known for breaking. Like, Chance the Rapper's first two times on the radio were on my show, and he was off the top of the head the whole time.
Yeah.
And it was always like, you know, it wasn't the greatest ever, but it was like fun and he knew what he was doing. Joey Badass, first time on the radio. Action Bronson's, West Side Gunna Conway, Mac Miller,
yeah.
Astro. Who his first time on my show blew everybody away. It might be the best freestyle ever on my show. Logic. Logic really bodied it. Man, who's popping? Like Freddie. Well, the thing about Freddie Gibbs is I feel like I helped break him through my show, but he can never come up to Shade 45 because of some old Interscope shit that he said. But I've always been supportive of him. And, you know, that's the homie.
Yeah.
But we definitely broke a lot of his music first. I did his first mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not the first. Ski. I got to shout out Ski. Ski did the first one, but I feel like I did the first one that was like... They put on iTunes and all that.
You worked with Eminem. What was that like?
Just, it's an honor, really, because to me, he's the greatest. He's the greatest rapper when it comes to. I'd put my money on him against anyone when it comes to like you want to battle. You want to like. I'm talking about bar lyrics.
Yeah.
The only people that are hanging with him in the world are like Kendrick, Black Dot, and probably Jay. Mm. Like, There's nobody else there.
But who has better Christina Aguilera references than Eminem? I can't name one person.
Nah, M's career is like untouchable, man. Yeah. Like really, it's amazing. So it's an honor to be under there. Shout to Paul. I've produced two songs for him, and that's, I got plaques on my wall for it. Right. It's like, that's amazing.
You're 10 years into living in New York. Do you
10? Nah, like yeah. 14.
14?
Yeah, 14 in January.
Do you feel like you're more New York now than you are Massachusetts?
See, that's a hard question, because like sports-wise, I'll always be Boston. I miss a lot of things about New England, like the food. I miss certain things about the people. But like my life now, like my daughter's a New York baby. She was born on Park Ave. Like,
right.
I'm in New York. When I'm not on tour, I'm in New York. Like, I'm very New York as far as like nightlife and culture and food and all that shit. But like at the end of the day, when it comes to anything, like my foundation is all New England and Boston. So I'll always be like diehard about sports, and it's my upbringing, you know what I mean? But yeah, as far as like going back all the time, like I'm a father, man. I got like, I have a record label. I got a career. It's like, I just don't go back often unless. Boston's always kind of been cheap when it comes to booking DJs too. So like, I don't really do clubs up there because it's like, it never makes sense. I ain't going nowhere less than a certain amount. It's like, they're not cutting close.
Where were you when Moby got beaten up by Eminem?
I was,
were you the one there who beat them up?
It was at Paradise Rock Club. Yeah. I think.
It was off of Comm Ave. Yeah.
Yeah. Paradise. I've done a lot of shows there. I was there. I feel like right around that time too, in the exact same place, when you see the footage of him getting hit, there was like a crazy shooting and like a couple of like whiz by my head in the same exact spot.
Whoa.
Yeah, so that I remember that a lot more. But I've seen that footage and been like, oh shit, I remember that too. Like a same exact spot. And then we've done so many sold out shows there. But a lot of crazy.
I feel like you're pivoting.
What do you mean?
I just want you to take responsibility for beating up Moby.
No.
I feel like I read an interview where you said that you wanted, there were possibilities of you like doing more like rhythmic records at a certain point in your life. Like
rhythmic, that, as far as what?
Like somebody asked,
when I think
like,
rhythmic, I think of like shitty radio.
That's what I want to know. Are you going to do some shitty radio songs?
Nah, I'm going to definitely do some like a lot. I've done plenty of R&B, but I'll do a lot more in reggae, and I would love to produce some rock records at some point in time.
Do you have any like specific groups that you can think of?
I would love to work with like Red Hot Chili Peppers. That shit would be amazing. I'm not sure how rusty Aerosmith is, but that would be awesome. I grew up being a big Aerosmith fan.
Well, local guys.
Local, yeah.
Yeah.
What placements do you really wish worked out over the years?
Not Life Is Good for Nas.
Yeah.
We did a song and it was like on the album and it got taken off. But that song, we talk about every time. Not every time we see each other, because we've been hanging out a lot more lately, but we talk about it, and I'm like, bro, I need it. Like, I either want to put it on my album, or I keep hearing with Lost Tapes 2, because Lost Tapes 2 is coming out.
Yeah.
So, I don't know when, but it's been talked about for years, and it's still talked about when I'm around. So it's definitely at least going to be on that. But, like, that, the beat is one of my favorite beats I ever made. I mean, it's just, I want it to come out. But we've done some new stuff recently.
Were there any songs that had to be scrapped because of label clearances that you really like?
In my career, dealing with it right now.
Yeah,
right now. Yeah, the 2 Chainz project. We're having some tough times with some samples.
Damn. But shout out to Tech, by the way.
Yeah,
that's our guy. Shout out to Tech. Yeah, he's been riding with it. Like this has been done for like a year.
Really,
it's frustrating. That's why, like with the Rock Nation announcement, I got mad because some of the sites took what I said in Billboard and made it about me and Chainz album when it was really about announcing my album.
Right.
And I was just like, yeah, by the way, me and Chainz have a project coming. But it's like, I'm all about Pretty Girls Love Trap Music. I didn't want 2 Chainz to feel a certain way because I know he's promoting his new album.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wasn't trying to like take any focus off that.
Right.
I just, you know, like we were talking about, the blogs will make the headlines they want. You got to be careful what you say. But our project's amazing. But right now it's all about his album and my album too. Like he's on my album.
Yeah,
he actually just sent me the vocals like 2 days ago. The song's a hit.
Yeah,
yeah.
So going to be a shitty rhythmic?
No, this shit is hip hop. But it's like hip hop. No, you know what? It's kind of it's kind of like, no. You can hear it on 197 at 1 p.m. and be like, oh, this shit goes. It's called Man of the Hour. I just announced it on your
Man of the Hour,
featuring a couple people that I don't want to say yet. But it's 2 Chainz and 2 other people.
Wow.
Bam, 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 bam. Can I get a one time?
So Summer Jam's coming up. Then you guys go on tour. How long is the Joey tour going to last?
There's a U.S. tour and a Europe tour. So the U.S. tour is from July 8th to August 16th. And then the Europe tour, I think I'm a fallback, and I think Powers is going to go with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's part of Pro Era, and he does mm-hmm. certain shows. The Europe shit is just a lot, bro.
Sure.
Like, I've done so many Europe tours, and it's like, whatever you think, everything going on in the world right now, and just me having a baby at home, it's like, I don't want to be gone for that long.
Mm-hmm.
Even the U.S. tour, I'm flying home every week.
Is that right?
Yeah, I do that. Since Harley's been born, I've been flying. Like, every tour I go on, I fly home either on Monday or Tuesday, hang out with her, do what I got to do, my radio show, whatever, then fly back out.
How old is Harley?
She's almost two.
And how has being a father changed you? Completely. Not just your schedule, but as a person.
Completely, man. It's like, I used to get on planes and be like, yo, my life's awesome. If this plane goes down, it's all good. I lived 20 other people's lifetimes at once. Right. I was like, it's all good. Now I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, every move I make, like, my daughter got to pay for it. It's like, it's completely different, man.
Yeah.
I look at everything different. Just even moving around in the streets is like, I used to be real short tempered. And like,
yeah.
The other night I had to catch myself. Like, I used to just be quick to want to, you know, someone disrespected to handle it. And it was like, now I got to be like, I got to fall all the way back.
Mm. Do you watch a lot of like Daniel Tiger?
I don't even know what that is.
It's a children's show.
Nah, I watch a lot of Mickey Mouse Clubhouse and Wally Kazam and what else? Bubble Guppies. That's my shit.
Have you thought about sampling any of those things?
Yeah, I made a couple beats this month. I sampled one from Fraggle Rock. I made one from but Fraggle Rock's fly. Like, I watch it, I don't feel like I'm watching it because my daughter. I watch.
Yeah.
Like, I remember this shit.
Yeah.
I sampled Tom and Jerry. Tom and Jerry's not really good for the baby though, because like they be hitting each other.
Right.
I watch Family Guy with her, and her mom gets really upset. Because like for the most part, Family Guy's jokes that like. She won't get.
Right.
But then they show like dudes get their brains blown out. It's like, right.
Yeah, endless fights, all that.
Yeah. But I love Family Guy. Another news.
I mean, you are from New England, so.
Yeah, nah, it's my favorite show.
Did you also get the hat in gray?
You know what? I need that. They've been very cool about the hats, though. Shout out to Emery, man. He's the man.
Emery is the man.
Shout out to Brian, too.
Yeah.
Yo, when they did the Major League Baseball hats, my man Brian brought me the hat early. He brought it to my show, and it came in, like, the ill box. Like,
yeah.
When you buy it in the store, it doesn't come in that box.
Right.
It came in
the
ill
box. You got the Red Sox one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I was on a mission for that.
If you were gifted a Yankees hat, would you wear it?
Absolutely not. I wouldn't even touch it.
When you lived in the Bronx, would you go anywhere
people
near?
People ask me. I went to the event, even though I already had the hat. I went to the event at Lids, and, like, people were hitting me, like, yo, get me the Yankees one. I'm like, nope. And I met Derek Jeter a couple weeks ago with DJ Premier. And he was like,
is he getting on the record?
No. Is he on but DJ's I had my Rock Nation Red Sox hat on. And I was like, you see what it is? I go, yo, bro, I hate the Yankees. But I was like, I respect the fuck out of you. Like, and he gave me dap. If I said that a couple years ago, because I remember, you know, I've known his sister, too. And she used to get mad when I'd be around. She'd be like, take the Red Sox hat off. She's mad cool.
Yeah.
But nah, Derek Jeter is mad cool. And he's someone he's the GOAT, man. He's amazing. So shout out to him. I hate the Yankees because I was raised like that, and because of a lot of sucker shit, like dudes like Johnny Damon, and like my uncle taught Babe Ruth how to play baseball.
Is that
my
right?
Great uncle, yeah. And it's crazy because part of that curse and all that is that, you know, Babe Ruth went from Boston to New York.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because I went from Boston to New York, and the month I moved here, I went to Game 7, and they reversed the curse, and
whoa.
I was there.
Wow.
When I moved from Boston to New York.
Talk about an exclusive.
I'm the Babe Ruth of fucking baseball. I'm the Babe Ruth of baseball. I'm the Babe Ruth of Hennessy. I'm the Babe Ruth of hip-hop. Fuck.
Yo, thank you so much for coming through. Congratulations. We're looking forward to your album.
Yeah, man,
we're looking forward to that 2 Chainz album.
Yep.
We're looking forward to all 2 Chainz albums.
All 2 Chainz albums.
And we're really thrilled that you can come up here finally, and we'll see you soon. Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real. Jeff, if people want to find out more about us, It's The Real. If people want to find out more about this podcast, A Waste of Time with It's The Real, if people want to know where to get tickets for our live event on July 26th, 2017 at the Highline Ballroom, where can they go?
You can always buy tickets to our Highline show at itsthereal.com. There's also our music at itsthereal.com. You can also listen to our music on soundcloud.com/itsthereal. All of our old episodes for this podcast
are on soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. They are also on iTunes. Search for A Waste of Time with It's The Real. You can go to Spotify, listen to all of our music, and maybe some iTunes. You can go to Tidal. I don't know. Any streaming service, we're on there.
We're there.
In terms of social networks, we are on Instagram at It's The Real, Facebook at It's The Real, Twitter at It's The Real, Snapchat, we are It's The Real, and It's The Real Eric, because It's The Real was taken.
Jeff, this podcast isn't going anywhere unless people spread the word, and we like it to start right here with us. Who would you like to shout out?
I want to shout out a couple friends, Mouse Jones and Reek.
Hey!
Over at the He-Man Woman Haters podcast.
Shout out to our guys over there.
Everybody over there, from Kyle to...
They're great dudes. Yeah. They're just a fun bunch of guys talking shit and...
And they don't actually hate women.
And we went in there and talked our shit. And I believe that episode's coming out very soon. Look out for that. That's on SoundCloud and iTunes. And there's something like 101 episodes in.
Yes, we got there after the centennial mark.
Shout out to those guys over there. Jeff, I'd like to shout out Lola J on Twitter. Shout out to Lola.
Shout out to her.
She said she grew up in White Plains and she just discovered us and has our album on repeat. It's fucking incredible. She says she's going to do a music video. She says she's a model, and that she's doing a world star hip hop video for our song Metaphor with Tunji Ige. Shout out to Tunji out there. Check out Teddy Bear Fresh on all your streaming platforms. Go to itsthereal.com and Ticketweb this Friday. Get those Highline tickets. Now for real, for real.
Sure.
We will see you guys next week.